Hello, everybody. Welcome to Media Voices, the media-focused podcast bringing you all the news and the views from the previous week. I'm your host, Chris Sutcliffe.
I'm Esther Thorpe.
And I'm Peter Houston. So, before we get started, on Thursday, May the 2nd, it's going to be a big celebration for our 100th episode. We'll be releasing more details this week, but it'll involve a live recording in London, as well as balloons and cupcakes. So get it in your diary. Get cupcakes in your diary.
Why did you say cupcakes? Like, you, even you don't believe it. Like, we're tricking people into coming.
I can't believe it's going to be cupcakes.
I'm sorting cupcakes, kids. Don't worry.
Are you making them?
No.
I'm so excited.
Esther, who did you talk to this week?
So this week I spoke to Marco Bertozzi, who is the VP of EMEA at Spotify. So he talked about how Spotify's business has evolved from the early days, why the company believes strongly in the future of podcasting, and what the audience's relationship is like with advertising in audio. He also talks a little bit about why they've just launched a hashtag Love Ads campaign.
Fantastic. Ahead of that, though, as ever, we are going to begin by talking about all the news from the previous week. And the BBC is proposing to launch a new charity to fund local news reporting across Britain, as The Guardian says, in an acknowledgement that many commercial news outlets are no longer willing to pay for regional public interest journalism. So this is pretty much off the back of the Cairncross report, which said exactly that, that, you know, maybe the local news business can no longer sustain itself. And the new organisation to be set up in conjunction with tech companies, is going to be called the Local Democracy Foundation. I feel like between all the Google digital news initiatives and everything that we have too many organizations and charities called things like the Local Democracy Foundation. I'm getting very confused.
Definitely getting confused. Someone at some point is going to have to grab this thing by the throat and actually bring some sense to it. So maybe this is the one that other ones start to get pulled into, and maybe this could end up being a kind of coordination-y type scheme. I don't know.
What, do you think that everybody's going to come together under the banner of the Local Democracy Foundation?
Well, in the UK, I mean, one of the problems is we read about Facebook doing things and about Google doing things. They're not necessarily doing them in the UK. It could be the Kansas Evening Standard.
Although, did you see that it was only this week that Facebook announced that there just isn't enough local news for them to make, for their local news initiative to
make sense? That was my favourite headline sense. Of the week.
It was so weird.
Was that the same time as they released the warning to publishers that they maybe shouldn't rely on the news feed?
Yeah. I think the thing I like about this, it's a bit like Peter said, there's been so much money poured into local journalism. But actually, if this gives it a chance to be a little bit focused, I think the BBC are kind of the right people to do this.
Yeah. But are they, though?
Yeah.
But they... Okay, so some previous endeavours... Well, because previously they've mishandled this a little bit. So do you remember the previous... their endeavour to save local journalism that ended up basically just giving a bunch of local reporters to, you know, Johnstone and Reach rather than any of the actual local titles?
Oh, that was like 134 reporters, wasn't it? And Reach,
yeah.
Reach, NewsQuest and JPI just ended up like canning a load of reporters to get these ones for cheaps.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely needs thought. Definitely. This is one of those things that makes me... You know, this is a classic Media Voices, yay, boo story. You know, the fact that this is needed is really kind of sad. The fact that it's the BBC that's hopefully going to go out and solve it. Well, we're fans of the BBC, I think, even if Esther doesn't pay for a fee.
I think it is interesting, though, that they've led with this kind of acknowledgement that commercial news outlets, like... Can local news journalism actually be profitable? That's almost the basis they start off is no, it can't. So we've got to make it charitable.
Yeah, or rather, it can no longer be.
What do you think gave it away? I also think there's another side of this story which I thought was I don't know, a little bit disturbing, where they talk about democracy and how this can help fix democracy, and this democracy's got much bigger problems than whether local crime stories or local council stories are being covered.
Director General of the BBC, Tony Hall, is kind of explicit about this. He says the flow of information we all need to participate in democracy where we live has been drying up. And so he's talking about the fact that you know, these local journalism outlets no longer function, you know, in terms of kind of serving the public interest, which is, I mean, do we all broadly agree with that, or do we think maybe that's overstating it, or do we think that, you know, endeavors like the Bureau Local are actually kind of filling that gap already? Where do we come down on this?
I know, I think he's right. I think there is a lack of information. We've talked about this in the context of the Grenfell inquiry and what went on there. I don't think, you know, Bureau Local was brilliant, and the stuff that's going on in Scotland with the ferret is brilliant. But they're, you know, they're not huge operations. They're trying to get established. They're doing brilliant work, but it's not everywhere. And he's right. We, you know, funding local journalists to report on council meetings is a great thing. Is that going to help fix democracy?
Well, what are you talking about when you say fix democracy?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, really. Guys.
Let's deal with some of the smaller issues this morning. I'm also... sorry, I'm just... This is one of my hot buttons. This idea that we need to turn to charity to fund news, whether we like it or not, it's actually important, because I just read a piece in Neiman Labs 2019 predictions where they're talking about the subscription apocalypse. Which is actually rubbish. It should be it should be Subscribergeddon.
No,
I don't mean the idea is rubbish. I mean the Subscribergeddon is much more impactful than the subscription apocalypse.
So you're saying, I mean, this Neiman Lab piece is basically what Esther's been talking about. It's subscription satiation.
Yeah. And what the guy Brian Moritz that wrote this is a professor at one of the US universities. He says, it's actually quite funny the way he puts us. You know, you subscribe to your local paper and the New York Times and the Washington Post, because if you don't, democracy dies in dark. And Netflix and Hulu and HBO and Athletic and ESPN and blah, 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 blah. And he's right. And Esther has been talking about this for ages. This idea of subscription fatigue.
I think we need to do a special on this, because how do you...
I was just about to say that. Because this is not a topic for...
Because how do you square that circle of, you know, paying to support the people you want to while also having having access to, ready access to vital journalism?
I think this also brings Netflix. Us to our next stories.
It
guys.
Absolutely does. What a segue. So the New York Times CEO, Mark Thompson, is warning publishers ahead of the Apple News launch. He's saying that we're also generically worried about our journalism being scrambled in a kind of Magimix blender with everyone else's journalism.
And I mean, yes, that's exactly how these kind of things work.
Well, yeah, exactly. It really is. Later on in the article, he says, even if Netflix offered you quite a lot of money, does it really make sense to help Netflix build a gigantic base of subscribers to the point where they could actually spend $9 billion a year making their own content and will pay me less and less for my library?
So the one thing I'll say ahead of this is that on the day this episode goes out, they've got their big announcement in the evening. There is so much confusion around what they're actually launching. Because we've been talking for ages about a Netflix, like they're kind of launching the Netflix for magazines. They're launching basically what they took over Texture to do. And then suddenly there's this Apple News subscription offering coming out. And they're talking about launching like an actual Netflix. So by my count, that's three separate entertainment things that they're looking to launch. Are they all going to be a subscriber thing, or are they going to bundle this into one kind of massive, like you pay $9.99 and you get video, magazines and news?
And music?
And gosh,
I'd so at the,
that's
at
too
the
big
moment,
fail.
At the moment, I actually don't know if there is going to be an Apple News subscription, or if this has all got very, very confused with the magazines one.
I kind of don't know about you two at this point, but I feel like bundling it with entertainment makes sense.
I think we also may as well just get to the point where we all just subscribe to Skynet and have done with that.
I was going to say, like, news and magazines are very, very, very different beasts, much like TV series and films, but I suppose Netflix kind of blended those two, haven't they? So
I think yeah. if you've got a broad enough range of content, it doesn't really matter.
Right. So
we broke Esther.
On the basis, if everything's responsive, yeah, fine. Yeah, if you're just putting stories in and everything else, if you're offering magazine PDFs, which is what it looked like from the code, you can't blend that with all this stuff coming out from newspapers.
But it's not PDFs, though, is it?
Apparently they were. They've looked into the code of the Apple for magazines, and they said it's PDFs.
Nah, they're stripping the content. They're flowing the content. It's not. It's dynamic.
Are they,
content.
Though? I actually don't think they will.
Oh, they will. It'll be dynamic. There's no way they're running flat PDFs. It's got to be dynamic content. The point really is more about the publishers. Why is the NYT and Mark Thompson holding back? That's the real point.
This makes financial sense for us, even if it.
But
even
the Washington Post did this. I'm sure there was something about them potentially being partners. And then people were saying online, well, why have I got a $300 a year subscription to Washington Post?
Yeah.
I can cancel it and get the Apple one for $9.99 a month. And I save a ton of money and I still get Washington Post.
Well, they've already got a relationship with a good-sized subscription base. They've got a direct relationship. If they go into an Apple News, they won't have a direct relationship. So other than achieving some kind of reach... there's not much in it for them.
The Guardian's quite interesting though, because they've always been the first to this kind of thing. You know, they were really, really good when social first came up. They had their brand everywhere. And if they're pulling back from this, I would take serious note of that. But I suppose as well, actually, if they can't put their call to action donations, because Apple will take 30% of it.
And moving on then, Instagram is launching a checkout feature. So part of their drive to become the internet, they're, you know, them and Facebook are basically taking over the checkout function of a load of other sites. Esther, what's actually happening with this one?
This is interesting because this is Facebook's real first foray into actually dealing with monetary transactions. So I think the idea is that you can see a product in Instagram and you'll be able to click buy now, and Instagram will have your payment details and, you know, address details, and you can just check out. It's the sort of thing Pinterest should have launched ages ago. And I think the report said that apps like WeChat and Line have been well ahead on this game, and actually we've been really slow on the uptake. But it is that step towards Facebook actually having your card details, which of what you've seen this week... given that they've had millions and millions of passwords stored in plain text, I'm not sure anybody's going to want.
I think it's one of those things where the convenience of it will override a lot of people's reticence to give them their details.
But I think there's kind of two sides to this. They're not aiming to kind of be an Amazon where, you know, you go and search for stuff and you buy stuff that way. They're not aiming to be a shop front. They're aiming to be the kind of pass-by impulse shopping channel.
Inspiration.
Well, you know what this is? So Twitch is a Amazon property, and they have a very similar feature to this where you can buy a game that somebody else is streaming directly from that stream. That seems to me to be what this is, just kind of much more general and much more around lifestyle product.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't this just tie into the whole influencer thing? So, I don't know, one of the Kardashians is selling something.
Which one? I want to buy it. Which one?
I follow them on Instagram.
There's actually quite a lot of complexity in this, though. So... when they have had a shop now feature, but that takes you through to the store shop front. But it's things like, how do you do stock control? How do you do sizing availability? How do you communicate that with the app? So that'll be interesting to see what they actually do around that.
Ah, so this is like full-on end-to-end e-commerce.
And it's quite complicated. So I can see in a way why they haven't done it.
It must be a Shopify type thing where they don't control or hold any stock. It's going to the merchant. But all communications is handled through the e-commerce infrastructure that Instagram's put in place. Also, how would you know if it was blue or gold?
That is so 2017.
Sorry.
So, on to in brief. As I mentioned earlier, Facebook has screwed up again this week. It turns out that hundreds of millions of users had their account passwords stored in plain text and searchable by Facebook employees as far back as 2012.
TI Media's Now magazine is set to close. The group MD has said that celebrity news and gossip is now available immediately online, putting the gossip mag market under pressure. Who knew?
And this next one is almost too broad to do in brief, but we literally don't have the time to talk about it. Google has been hit with a £1.28 billion fine from the EU for blocking rival online search advertisers. So that's
a question. What happens to all that money?
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Can it be distributed into local news?
Yeah.
And finally, Tumblr's porn ban, which came into effect in December, has actually led to a fifth of users deserting the platform.
I'm not convinced that this is necessarily true. I think it's going to be closer to half of its users.
I saw something about MySpace had lost a whole bunch of music, 10 years worth of music.
Yeah, it did. It lost everything prior to 2016. But is this not a good idea? Should it not just be every 10 years or so you just get a consistent purge of everything you previously posted online?
Like, if Bebo lost my data from how many years ago, I would not be upset.
This is like digital archaeology. So we've been through MySpace and Bebo. GeoCities, anyone?
So we have a growing transcript section on our website, thanks to a clever AI transcription tool from Trint. You can go to voices.media/transcripts to see them all, where there's also a link to our dedicated email list that sends them out every Monday.
This week I spoke to Marco Bertozzi, who is the Vice President of EMEA Sales and Multi-Market Global Sales at Spotify. So I began by asking him what his role involves and how he ended up at Spotify after working agency side.
I'm Marco Bertozzi, I'm VP of Europe Sales, and I also have sort of two hats. So I run all the local sales teams in Europe, and I run our international team, which we call MAP, which is multi-market activity currently out of London and New York. And well, it's 2 years in, and 20 years before that was a media career in media agencies. I got to a point where I thought I would like to try and see what it is to work on the brand side. Having a big background in programmatic, I worked with a lot of the tech platforms in all their shapes and forms, so I got pretty close to them. And in actual fact, my first meeting with Spotify was when they first started to sell ads programmatically and they came to all the trading desks. So, we started to get to know each other and I sat on a few advisory boards and things like that. And then when I thought about where to work, I think Spotify just ticked all of my boxes at the time, because I was looking for a company that had great content, that was sort of technology and data driven, and that was sort of my background from an agency side. And I really wanted to work for a brand that, people sort of lived and breathed every day. I think when you work in on the media agency side, or any agency side really, it's really B2B, and it's great working for a company where people go, oh, you work for,
And what's it been like moving from kind of the smaller agency world to, I suppose this is a global platform, Spotify now?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because actually Publicis Media and Publicis Group was a pretty vast organisation as well in terms of offices and numbers of people and so on. So it's kind of less about the scale of it. If anything, that's the plus, because we're still a company of a size that, you feel like you're genuinely contributing and able to actually know people all over the organisation. I think being on the brand side, I think you're very, everyone is pulling in the same direction. Fundamentally, we have a very overarching goal, which, paraphrased is really just to make allow artists to make a living off what they do and to get music in the hands of anyone who wants it. So, that for us is a common goal that we're all pointing towards. And I think it makes how you go about your job a lot cleaner, a lot simpler. I think in agency world, there's tons of different brands and matrices and people pulling in different directions and fiefdoms, and they make it work, and I made it work, but there is a simplicity, I think, to having that really, really single-minded focus. And I think less about global platform or not. I think what I've the biggest question I'm asked regularly from, especially from ex-colleagues, is what's it like being in sales when you've been a media agency person the whole time?
Just give you a bit of an edge.
And it is a very interesting switch, and I think it's one that you have to have a certain mindset to do. Everything is much faster paced in sales. I think also the individual is very important. So one person can genuinely make a difference to a market. If you bring a new leader in or anything like that, they really can change everything.
So I've been a Spotify subscriber for quite a long time now. So it's been quite a long time since I listened to, it was the five songs and an ad. How has the ad business evolved over that time? Is it still, what's the subscriber journey like, if you don't?
The ad business has been and continues to be a very successful part of what we do. And we have most definitely evolved in terms of how we offer. So, you know, yes, back then it would have been audio ads and then maybe a bit of display.
And again, programmatic wasn't a thing.
So. Yeah, maybe some display. And then we moved on to mobile and introduced video. And so we've been on a journey. I think really now, though, we look at things very differently. I think if you think about where Spotify is, we really sort of consider ourselves kind of centre of culture. Like, people are reacting to us all the time. People turn to music in, you know, it could be a big macro moment in the world. It could be an award ceremony. It could be. But then it goes down to your very individual things when you're having a dinner party, when you're, you know, celebrating. So people turn to music, and we kind of reflect these cultural moments. And so now everything we're really doing from a brand perspective is we're kind of bringing them into that situation and hoping that that sparks, you know, some real connections for them. And we are, you know, as other companies, we're keen to make sure that we use it responsibly, but we use first party data to help with identifying those key moments and mindsets that people are in. And if you can, you know, the holy grail is if you bring an advertiser with the right creative into that right moment, then, you know, then we think we can generate some really interesting outcomes. And at the end of the day, yes, we have historically been music focused and people think of us as music, but our biggest, I guess, one of the areas that I like talking about most is about understanding people through music. So it's really about the people and not just about the music. And I think, you know, as we talk to advertisers, that's what we're really focused on, is helping them realise that if when they advertise with us, we can then generate these business outcomes.
And do advertisers kind of get that? Because so much of the ad market's been around display and reaching people to what they're reading or clicking. Mm. Do they get the audio audience yet?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things in there. First of all, we have an audio business, we have a video business. Mm. And, you know, the video business is very strong as well. A lot of people in the past always think, when they think of audio, they think radio. Yeah. And we've moved on from that discussion in a big way, because one of our core strategies is around ubiquity. So that's what that means, is we want to make Spotify available wherever you want to listen to it. So that could be in the car, it's connected speakers at home, it's connected TVs, it's Xbox and PlayStation, mobile, iPad, you name it. The list is gets longer and longer. So what's important about that is it gives us a real layer of context about what people are doing. So there is something like 80% of your audio listening time, you don't have a screen available to you, right? So if you think about maybe working out in the gym or driving or any of these things. So now that we know what people are doing, what context they're in, we know something about them, we can put together some really sophisticated strategies for how brands can succeed in this audio world. And that's, at the end of the day, that's our goal, is to become, you know, the world's number one streaming platform, audio platform. And we're trying to explain to advertisers now that, you know, it can't be all about video. I think there's a bit of a cultural shift now about moving away from staring at screens endlessly as well. So we've got that little sort of context as well coming into play. And so we're encouraging advertisers to think about how they're building their sonic brand in a world where, you know, more and more things are happening, whether it's connected devices, voice activation, music, and then obviously podcasts and things that no doubt we'll talk about. But that's our main thrust, and advertisers are buying it, and we're proving it. So the key thing for us is we work with the people, you know, Nielsen Brand Effects. We work with Moat. We work with IAS. We work with someone like Placed to demonstrate footfall on the back of our campaigns as well. So we're working with all the industry leading partners to prove out these business outcomes, and you know, that's what advertisers are buying into, and that's where we're seeing the success.
And that segues really nicely into Spotify's recent acquisition of Gimlet and Anchor.
Yes, very exciting.
Yeah, so it's clear that Spotify believes that podcasts have a profitable future. Mm. Are we kind of at the start of the boom, or have we got a little bit of a way to go before that's we really start to see?
Yeah, I mean. So first of all, I mean, just taking a step back, Daniel's view was, you know, we've clearly been very focused on music, and we will continue to do that. But, you know, his view is that we need to, that the audio marketplace is effectively, so it's valued at like a tenth of the video marketplace in terms of how we value the interactions. Yeah. And, you know, his view is that can't, that, that can't be like that forever. And I think people are realizing that more and more. So, you know, our goal is to become the number one audio platform in the world. And I think you can't do that without thinking about the other ways that people are consuming audio. So podcasting is an obvious thing. What I like about podcasting is, to your point, is it's sort of very demand driven. I think it's sort of crept up on the world. Podcasting is become this incredibly popular thing. Most importantly as well, with a young audience. I think there was possibly a time when people thought it was, you know, older people would listen to, but it's actually, you know, I think the average age is like 26 or something of listening, and it's growing crazily. It's like 250% up in terms of listening. So I think we're very much at the start, because if you think about how people are consuming it at the moment, we, you know, our focus is, I think we're the world's second biggest podcasting platform now, we are, but how you consume it is still, there's work to be done. And obviously we want to bring all the good stuff that we've brought to the music side of our business with algorithms and playlists and creating content for you, you know, and making things discoverable and make it easy to discover things. We want to bring all that to podcasts as well. And so I think the more of that we do, the more appetite there will be. And we see it in the numbers. So people who listen to podcasts on our platform spend twice as long, more than twice as long on the platform than those only listen to music. So, you know, right now we're probably thinking this could easily be 20% of the time people spend on our platform alongside the music. And I think we've seen in the programming side of things with all the usual companies that, you know, that appetite for content has grown and grown. And I think our purchase of Gimlet is just giving us that opportunity to create really, really outstanding content for people to consume. And hopefully as we do more and more of that and we make it easier to discover, they'll come back and they'll listen for longer. So I would see us very much at the start of this, and I think we've got a huge opportunity to revolutionise all of this.
And how does programmatic advertising kind of fit into that vision?
Well, we haven't, you know, from that side of things, we, again, it's really early days. We've obviously only just bought the company. So I think all I'd say is, I think we definitely see, whether I wouldn't necessarily jump to programmatic, I would just say, you know, advertising, we see it as an opportunity, a promising opportunity, but, you know, right now it's a little bit early to say. I think people are used to advertising in some shape or form with podcasts. So I think there is, you know, there's a little bit of that head start in terms of how people think. But as we do with everything else, we'll work through that, and we'll aim to create a really good experience for our listeners, because that's ultimately our number one goal, is to, you know, they're happy, they keep coming back and they listen for longer.
And ads have kind of got a bad rap in, well, not recent years, but they've certainly got a bad rap. So what's your take on interrupting the audio experience with advertising?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always thought, and I don't want to go back to radio, having said we don't want to talk about radio, but I've always thought that radio has kind of had a good rep for being quite personal and intimate and, you know, that sort of interaction. I think from Spotify's perspective, that, you know, there's a couple of just important key facts, which is, you know, first of all, our ad load is very low compared to commercial radio. So we actually don't put that many ads in front of people per hour. And I think that's important. But I think as with what we're working on a lot is the quality of the ads, because, you know, we have this opportunity now to say, if we know what they do, if we know that someone is driving, or we know that they are playing on Xbox, or we know the type of music they're listening to, we have the opportunity to develop creative that fits comfortably into that space. So not only do slightly less ads, but do them in a way that blends with what they're doing. The other thing is that it's actually a very good value exchange. I think our listeners are pretty, they understand that they're getting 40 million songs and there's 3 billion playlists on there that these people are leaning into, right? These are playlists created by our listeners that, you know, they understand that what they're getting for those ads. And I think that's important, because then that is again another opportunity for the brand advertisers to benefit from that. So one of our, you asked about the advertising, one of our video formats is a call to say, if you watch this video, we'll then give you 30 minutes ad free. So again, people are used to that format on our platform. It creates incredible viewability figures for us, and which will come on to my second point. It creates incredible view, like very high 70, 80, 90% viewability, because people are accepting, how we're putting this ad to them. On a wider basis, because our platform is sort of built like that, there's no scrolling, there's no ads around anything else, it's 100% share of voice, so we've got all the ingredients. I think the ads community in general is something where I personally think we just have to lift the bar. I think, our standards need to be higher as an industry in terms of what we expect or what advertisers should expect of us. And, I see one of the things that's made me very comfortable about coming from buy side to sell side is that I can look a client in the eyes and say, we've got a really quality advertising product here. People are watching it. We do have high viewability. We do have only professional content and brand safety. And I think we need to, as an industry, we need to do more of that. And in fact, today we are launching a Love Ads project. So I've been talking about it for some time. It was really an internal proposition that we started with for my teams, really. When I joined, when I looked at how good our products were, I felt like we should be really shouting about this and be proud of this, and we should love our ads. And, we do work in a big subscription business as well. So
yeah.
It also helps give people, focus and identity. But what's been interesting about it is it's kind of permeated out into the world, and people, journalists and clients and other people were saying, well, what's this love ad thing? Because that seems like a lone positive voice in what sometimes has become slightly negative rhetoric. And so we've sort of run with that a bit, and we've been enjoying that. And I still get emails from people or stuff on LinkedIn where they end with hashtag love ads to me. So I don't know, they're playing to my soft side. But so today we're actually launching a really cool website that's going out into the market. It'll be open to everyone, where we're asking people to put their favourite songs associated with advertising and rank them and vote for them and create. So hopefully we'll end up with sort of top music associated with ads. But, with no particular goal other than to say, we're into this, we're into ads. And I think our industry, what we're doing is a bit of a micro thing, but I think our industry probably could learn from that. And in fact, talking to the IAB and people like that, I think they're sort of thinking, we kind of need to go down this road for our whole industry. And I think that's exciting. I think immediately people react well to just positive sentiment instead of negative.
Yeah. And they're called the triopoly now, with Google, Facebook and Amazon dominating global advertising. What would it take for Spotify to get up there?
Well, one of the things I've learned coming into Spotify is that we have been very single-minded about what we're trying to do. We tend not to worry too much about some of those other companies. We just focus on our area of business. We've got the most amount of people dedicated to audio of any platform out there. We've got a single-minded focus on what we're trying to do. We are growing, as you know. We're consistently growing, so we're over 200 million MAUs now and 96 million subscribers, and that continues to grow. So in our area of focus, then we would consider ourselves, that kind of scale. There is 2.5 billion smartphones out there, so you could argue there's the opportunity for, where we put our audio platform of the future. We work alongside all of these people, but we're very single-minded about what we're trying to achieve.
And Spotify has a kind of hybrid offering of subscriptions and ads to give its audience the experience they want. Could this work for other industries? Because I know Apple, I think, are looking to launch their own kind of Spotify for magazines.
Well, I mean, it's not my area of expertise, how the publisher's doing it. I think the concept of, either micropayments or repetitive subscriptions makes a lot of sense to people. I think, being what I like, for instance, if you take what Nick Hughes doing at The Telegraph, what I like about his you know, as a premium publisher, I think staying close to your audience is important. So, you know, that's something that we take very seriously at Spotify, is, you know, is being very considerate about our listeners and making sure we put them first. And I think that relationship is important to everything else we do. I think there's opportunity. If you've got a strong brand, you've got strong content, I think there's always an opportunity to benefit from some form of subscription.
And what kind of some of the key things you're aiming to achieve with Spotify's ad proposition just in the short term this year?
Our ambition is always to grow revenue really quickly.
Yep.
And that is what I'm always asked to do. So we'll continue along that line. We are relatively new into a few areas. We have a really cool self-service platform called Ad Studio, which is currently around the audio space. So advertisers are able to build their own campaigns in there and their own audio ads as well, importantly. As you know, with all the other companies, self-service, incredibly important part of automation in advertising. So that's one area we'll continue to focus on and grow as quickly as we can. The Ad Studio is very important. We bought the podcasting, we're going to grow podcasting. That's obviously something, as I said, we're at the start of, but I think we see a massive opportunity. And the data play is, again, something that we've got a lot of first-party data that we use regularly. But we're also going deeper on how we use that for sort of custom audiences and segments to really enrich what we're doing with our advertisers. So there's never just one thing. There's always like a whole range of things, but it's everything is sort of in growth ascendancy, and I think the audio side of that is something that I just think is going to be incredibly important. More and more advertisers are going to see that this is a great way to reach people, and it's not about radio anymore, and hopefully we'll be in place to benefit from all of that.
And the last thing we ask everybody is, what's the last thing you saw or read or listened to that really affected you?
Oh, well, I can. That one's easy to answer because... two evenings ago, I watched Free Solo, which I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about the guy who climbed without ropes up El Cap, which is a 3,500-foot mountain in Yosemite Valley. And he's a free climber, but this is the ultimate challenge. And it just makes you, you know, it was absolutely gobsmacking. Because there is, you know, people talked about how you have to be perfect, because there was no room for error. You couldn't make a mistake while you're practicing. You couldn't make a mistake at 50 feet. You couldn't make a mistake at 3,000 feet. There was no room for mistake. You've got to watch it. It is incredible.
So for those of you who've made it this far, please don't forget to bookmark Thursday, May the 2nd for our 100th episode celebration. We're going to be releasing more details this week, but it'll involve a live recording in London, as well as previously mentioned cupcakes.
And balloons.
So how can people keep abreast of all our 100th episode news?
Well, if you go to our website at voices.media, we've got pretty much everything on there now. We've got transcripts, we've got all our old newsletters, every episode we've ever done. And we'll pop some more info on there about the celebrations.
Or, Peter, how else can they find out?
Well, if they want real-time updates, they need to get social and follow us at Media Voices Pod on Twitter.
But until next week, when we're going to be back with some more of those details and another fantastic guest and maybe a special, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Bye.